My responsibility on an anniversary Sunday, I believe, is the same as it always is. To find something to tell you that will help you live in these times. And quite frankly, I've long since run out of my own ideas. And so today, as every Sunday, I'm borrowing from the wisdom of the Bible. And today, specifically, a man named Agur. He lived many years ago, but I think you would have liked him. The reason I like Agur is that he was a wise person. Those kinds of people are hard to find these days. I mean, wise guys come easy, but wise people, that's something else. Agur was so wise that the Spirit of God included his thoughts, his musings, in the pages of the Bible. And there's one fragment of his thought that we can look at, I think can help us live this 33rd anniversary year with wisdom and skill. It says in Proverbs 30, there are four things on earth that are small, but unusually wise. Ants, they aren't strong, but they store up food all summer. Rock badgers, they aren't powerful, but they make their homes among the rocks. Locusts, they have no king, but they march in formation. Lizards, they're easy to catch, but they're found even in king's palaces. I have to tell you that today, the Bible is taking me in a whole new direction. Usually, when I model up. I put in front of us the people of God who have blazed a path to glory, who have been heroes of the faith, who have changed their times and changed the entire course of history. Agur, on the other hand, models down. He chooses four creatures that are small, and although he doesn't say it, they're not particularly attractive or appealing. There aren't many people who have pet ants. Not many people take a rock badger out on a leash for a walk. If you find a locust or a lizard in your home, you'd probably try and stomp it to death. Yet Agur chooses these simple creatures, small and unattractive, and he models down. And as he does so, he gives us some wonderful wisdom that we can learn from as we do life together in this Christian community at the end of the 33rd year, entering into its 34th year. So he says, ants, they aren't strong, but they store up food all summer. So what do we learn from the ant? We learn something rather important. We see that we must work with diligence while we have the opportunity. There are a lot of one-dimensional people in our world. There are some people, they seem to live in the past. They're always talking about the good old days. To these people, it seems like everything that's good and useful is now a relic of yesteryear, and anything new must be inferior, or at least worthy of suspicion. They're the sort of people that drive through life looking in a rearview mirror. There are some other people who live in the present, and that's all they consider. Their Bible verse is, now is the accepted time, now is the day to enjoy yourself. And they live for today with no concern or thought for tomorrow. They can't seem to think of tomorrow, much less next week or next year. There are other folks who just want to live in the future. Their theme song is borrowed from Annie, Tomorrow. Or Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. After I get married, or after I graduate, or after I get the right house, or after I retire, then I'll find the pot of gold I've been looking for. The ant knows that life has opportunities and you have to seize them. Out of its past, it's developed an instinct to prepare itself. And the ant works in the summer to prepare for the winter that lies ahead. I think if the Bible writers were applying this principle, they would at least apply it to the study of the Word of God. Because if you read earlier in this chapter, Agur speaks of the Word. And he says that it's a Word that cannot be changed. And if you attack the Word, it will turn and attack you. And throughout the book of Proverbs, we see these wise teachers speaking to people in the formative period of life, urging them to know the Word, to study it, and to memorize it, and to meditate on it. Why? Because it will guide and guard as you enter into the days to come, the winter of life. And like the ant, we're to take advantage of the summer because winter lies ahead. For some of us, that winter may be very personal. In our family this week, it's the death of a parent. I cannot imagine what it might be for you. Perhaps it's a disease that you thought always belonged to other people, but now it's part of your life or the life of someone you deeply love. Perhaps it's a ministry that turned sour. Your dreams have been dashed. Perhaps it's children that you brought into this world with hope and joy and expectation, and they've turned their back on you and everything you value. One thing is certain for all of us, winter's coming. If anything, we're moving in our culture towards winter. It's like winter has already set in. We live in a time with broken hearts and broken homes and broken dreams and broken lives. It's like we're in the land of Narnia. There's always winter with never any Christmas. What you bring into winter is what you have. If you've got the wisdom of the ant, you'll take advantage of the times. And though the ant has little strength, it uses what strength it has to prepare for the future. Ants attend picnics, but they don't relax. While you're sipping on your glass of iced tea and enjoying a burger, they're carrying off the sugar one grain at a time. And if you don't watch them, they'll be back for the potato chips as well. They're always straining, always working, always carrying the load. Instinctively, they know that they have to use the summer to prepare for the winter that lies ahead. They are contributors. They use their strength for the colony to prepare it for winter. For God's sake, for your own sake, can we stop being consumers, become contributors in this world? Agar says, you've got the brains of an ant. You'll work with diligence while you have the opportunity. You'll seize the spiritual opportunities you have now while you can. You also learn something from the rock badger. Rock badgers, he says, they aren't powerful, but they make their homes among the rocks. See, rock badgers, they're gray and brown in color, and they're the color of the rocks. So as long as the rock badger is on the rocks, kind of sunning itself, it's very difficult to see. And when a predator comes to attack a rock badger, it slips into the cracks, the crevices of the rocks. So if a vulture or an eagle sees this animal, it literally has to knock down a mountain to get at it. The thing about a rock badger is they know where their security lies. And that's what we learn. We must know that our security is in the rock. Now, if a rock badger decides to go out on the prairie, it's vulnerable. If it ventures away from the rock, it doesn't matter how courageous that rock badger is. It doesn't matter if it's been doing bodybuilding at the local gym. The most courageous rock badger falls victim to the smallest wolf or lion when it wanders away from the rock. It's literally dead meat. So the biblical writers would have taken that truth and they would apply it to God. They would have said, if you have the wisdom of a badger, you'll know that your security is in God himself. I wouldn't for a moment dissuade the reading of the Bible or the study of the Bible, but I want you to know that knowledge about God is not the same thing as knowledge of God. The knowing Jesus Christ is not the same thing as knowing a mathematical formula. To know God, to live with God, to journey with God, is to be in relationship. Too often we get confused in that. Too often long-timers in the church are in danger of thinking that because they know theology, they know God. But theology, it's like a road sign, someone said. It's a road sign that says the city is 51 kilometers away. So a lot of people are standing around the road sign thinking they've found the city. And they start arguing about the size of the letters and whether or not it's 51 kilometers or 51 and a half kilometers. The sign simply says you'll find the city that way. Knowing the sign is not the same thing as being in the city. So if you have the wisdom of a rock badger, you'll know that your security lies in God himself, your relationship with God. Without that, like a rock badger, you have no security at all. I was thinking about our church. No doubt our church has been here for 33 years. It's been a kind of lighthouse. We're like a blinking light on the landscape for troubled souls seeking refuge, seeking the security of the rock, seeking security from the storms of life, pointing the way to safe passage. Then Agur says, locusts, they had no king, but they marched in formation. You know, a locust by itself, a grasshopper by itself, isn't particularly powerful. If you find one in your kitchen, it might startle you when it jumps, but it isn't much of a threat. Yet, if that grasshopper joins a league of grasshoppers, it can do all kinds of damage. So we see from the grasshopper that we must know that our strength is in community. I read that back at the turn of the last century, there was a plague of locusts in the plains of the United States. In fact, in a matter of days, this locust swarm went through Nebraska, Iowa, and Kansas, and in less than a week, it did $500 million worth of damage in the currency of that time. That is a powerful force. Just locusts don't have a king to get them organized. They don't have a general to call them into ranks. They don't need it. They instinctively know that they have to be in community with other locusts. And when that occurs, they're able to topple kingdoms. So the wisdom of the locust is the wisdom that tells us we must have community for strength. If we live in isolation, we're living from a position of weakness. I mean, that's the theme throughout the Bible. The Old Testament talks about the covenant people of God. The New Testament talks about the church. And what it tells us is that while you must have a personal faith, you can never have an individual faith. You cannot be a Christian alone. You must have other Christians. Heard about a man who went to an asylum for the criminally insane. He was a bit surprised to find that there were only 3 guards for every 100 inmates. He said to one of the guards, "Aren't you afraid that the inmates will unite, overcome you, and escape?" The guard said, "Lunatics never unite. Locusts do. Christians should. If we don't know where our power is." If you live life by yourself, you'll fall into the perils that you would not fall into if you're surrounded by other people with a common commitment, common purpose. I was thinking about the Apostle Paul and the tremendous mark that he made on history. But, you know, he didn't do it alone. He did it with a team of people. In fact, you read Romans 16, you see him listing off some of these people who have been part of his ministry, his comrade in arms, Epaphroditus, Onesimus, Silas, Barnabas, Titus, Timothy. When you come to the last hours of his life, he's got these last few words. He's in prison, and he's in correspondence with Timothy. And he talks about the people who have left him, and he talks about the people he still needs with him. He had this band of buddies around him. Here's the point. You'll make no real imprint for God alone. I know you're busy. I live a busy life, let me tell you. But if you have the instinct of a locust, you know you can't go alone. You need other Christians. They need you. I've been watching this TV show on Netflix called Lost. I realize that on cable it's come and gone. But it's a show about people that are stranded on a deserted island trying to survive. And the unofficial leader of the group, Jack, often says, "Live together, die alone." Maybe that's what the scripture is talking about when it says that we are a body. You sever a part of the body, it dies. We are a community. When you go alone, you take a risk. I thought this church for 33 years of providing soul refreshment, you know, to get people through the winter of life. It's been a point of light for those seeking the security of solid rock. It's been a place of strength for those who have connected to the community. And finally, he says, lizards, they are easy to catch, but they are found even in king's palaces. Now, the 4 creatures Agur mentions, this one is the most difficult. What I do know is that when you read that a lizard is easy to catch, yet it's in the king's palace, there's an incongruity about that. I mean, truthfully, a lizard is kind of an ugly animal. If I said your wife looks like a lizard, you'd probably be offended, hopefully. But there it is in the presence of the king. You can think about that and you recognize there's embedded in that image, the image of grace. Why? Because grace is incongruous. So from the lizard, we must remember the incongruity of grace. Many years ago, at my house, I was trying to fix something. I came across a screw, and I couldn't loosen it. And Kim's dad, this was when he was still alive, I mean, he could fix anything. And generally, when I was trying to fix something, he would look at me with this expression of pity, and then he'd come and help. So he came, and he immediately unfastened the screw, and I assured him I must have loosened it. Then he said, "This is a left-handed screw. It's a reverse screw. You have to tighten or loosen it by going the opposite direction." I thought, great. It took me most of my life to figure out how screws work, and now they change the rules. I thought, that's the way it is in the Bible. The Bible is it's a kind of a reverse screw. Everything in the culture that seems right, in the Bible, comes out wrong. The way up is the way down. The way to spiritual wealth is to acknowledge your spiritual poverty. The way to live is to die. The way to rule is to serve. I mean, the screw just doesn't work right. It's like a lizard in the king's palace. It's just incongruous. But unless you understand the reverse nature of the screw, you never get anywhere. The more you work at it, the more you're trying to live according to the values of the culture, the tighter the screw gets, and the less you accomplish. The whole Bible is like that. Everything's upside down. And when you come to the values of the culture, and you read the New Testament, it seems crazy. You spend 50 years of your life trying to learn how to play the game, and the game says, "Lester, we're going to change the rules." God's always doing that. The Bible illustrates grace in many ways. As I read the verses of Agur, one story came to my mind. It's a story of David and Saul. David was going to be king, but Saul was the current king. And Saul knew that David was going to be king, and he's very jealous of David. So most of David's life, his early life, he's in hiding. He's fleeing because Saul is trying to kill him. But David never retaliated against Saul. In fact, he became best friends with Saul's son, Jonathan. And they made a covenant with each other that if either one of them would die, they would take care of the other's family. Later on in battle, both Saul, King Saul, and Jonathan were killed, and David became the king. So all of Saul's relatives figured that David would now have them killed, because that's what most kings would do. And so as the family was trying to escape, a nurse is carrying one young boy, and in the escape, she drops him, and he becomes a paraplegic. His name's Mephibosheth. And one day, David says to the people of his court, they said, "Is there anybody still alive from Saul's family that I can show kindness to?" And they say, "Yeah, there's one boy. He's a cripple. He can't walk. His name's Mephibosheth." David said, "Bring him to me." So you can imagine the fear in Mephibosheth. He thinks he's coming to the king to be executed, to be killed. He thinks it's all over. So broken and fear-filled, David tells him, "From this day forward, you're going to live in the king's palace." That's grace. That's a picture for all of us. Broken and fearful, yet one day we'll live in the king's palace. C.S. Lewis said this way. He said, there are no ordinary Christians. These people here, whatever you might think of them, these people you're doing this community of faith together with, whatever you might think of them, the most ordinary person among us, you know, the Bible says they bear the weight of glory. And one day when God's all through with them, he'll make them exactly like Jesus Christ. One day, all of us, small, not particularly attractive, will be in a king's palace. So there are four things on earth that are small but unusually wise. If you could sit at their feet, if you could find their feet, you could learn some valuable lessons. And if we have the anticipation of the ant and we seize the opportunities we have before they pass, we'll be prepared when winter comes. If we have the brains of the badger, we'll know where security lies. It's not where most people put their trust. their family, their country, their technology. Our safety is in the rock of Jesus Christ. And if we have the good sense of a grasshopper, we'll live with the understanding that our power is in community. And to live alone is to live at risk. When we have the perspective of a lizard, we'll recognize the incongruity of God's grace. And the people that we share community with are destined to live in the presence of the King of Heaven. As we finish our 33rd year and begin our 34th year in this Christian community, we're going to sing a song called We Could Change the World.